This is an example of speech.
All our history. Welcome back to Tell Me What to Think, a free-from-oversight and free-of-charge, thoughtfully improvised, expletive-deleted, details-expanded, whistle-blow-hard, evergreen topical heatwave of an ongoing conversation turned podcast, in which we discuss politics, global affairs, current events, and anything else that bubbles up from the unmoderated comment section in our brains. We urge you to join us and tell us what you think. To listen to the archives, go to stoneduckmedia.com or tellmewhattothink.com. You can contact us at tmwttpod@gmail.com. I'm producer Pete. You can contact me on Twitter at @bloatednemesis. And your host is Charles Minnick, who is on Twitter at @green_weird, which is spelled W-Y-R-D. This episode, Charles interviews congressional candidate from New York's 12th District, Lauren Ashcraft, to tell us what she thinks. Prepare to get righteous and reactionary. This is Tell Me What to Think.
Welcome back to Tell Me What to Think, and with me I have Lauren Ashcraft. Lauren, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hey everyone, it's Lauren Ashcraft, and I am running for Congress in New York's 12th District. And I'm so excited. We're feeling a lot of momentum right now. Got the brand new Congress endorsement, and I'm actually in DC right now about to attend the brand new Congress summit, which if you've watched Knock Down the House, you'll see exactly what I'm about to encounter when we all practice our speeches together as a slate. So I'm really excited. And I'm running in the 12th district because this district is a very visual example of the inequality that is faced in our country. So it's a district of $50 million condos. It's a district of people living on the street and people living in public housing with extreme mold, and their elevator hasn't worked in a very long time. So they are left, unfortunately, dragging their oxygen tanks and walkers and wheelchairs upstairs. So there's just total inequality in our district. And it's just really amplified in District 12, since it is in the middle of New York City and one of the richest districts in the country. But that wealth is very, very concentrated in a specific set of zip codes in the Upper East Side. And the rest of the district is facing a lot of issues with working rights and being able to pay for the rent, which is skyrocketing, and being able to pay for medical bills because we do not yet have single payer Medicare for all. And why I'm so passionate about these issues is because I grew up in a family that was completely ignored by representatives. So on one side of my family, my grandmother was a Japanese immigrant, and she was unfortunately left a single mother and widow to feed my dad. After my grandfather was killed in a coal mining accident in West Virginia. So she was left, Japanese immigrant in the middle of West Virginia, facing extreme racism and facing extreme poverty. She survived off of very small Social Security checks that she got from my grandfather's short work history. And that is one of the reasons why I look at how Social Security is funded and realize that it has an income contribution cap of $133,000. So if you earn above that, then you stop contributing to Social Security, which keeps people like my family alive after that dollar limit. And under that is all of us, the working class people and the middle class and people facing poverty that are contributing to Social Security. So that kind of speaks to our taxation system as a whole that I would like to reform and make the wealthiest among us pay their fair shares, as well as the huge corporations that we've given far too many breaks and incentives to. And we need to give the working class people the break that they've deserved, because we've carried this country so long, and it's time for the top 1% to finally be paying what they owe. And then on the other side of my family, my grandfather unfortunately fell while he was working one day and broke his neck and was paralyzed from the neck down. And I grew up just, you know, watching my family act as his caretakers and seeing the renovations that we needed to do to his home and seeing the burdens placed on people with disabilities that have no other options. But representatives certainly don't stand up for people like my grandfather and my family. Whenever we look at programs like SSI, if you're unable to work and you need to feed your family, the maximum that you're allowed to receive from the government is about $2,300 per month. And that, if you are feeding children in New York City and paying rent, there's no way that you can afford to live in New York City if you have a disability. So basically, we are ignoring people with disabilities. We are creating a world in which they get pushed out of their homes. And the Americans with Disabilities Act is 29 years old, and it does the bare minimum. It was very necessary, but right now, if you are somebody that needs a wheelchair or a walker or uses crutches, for example, which can be temporary even, but if you have a disability and you're walking through New York City, then you realize and know that it's one of the least accessible places in the entire world. 75% of the subway stations are not accessible and do not have elevators. I have spoken with constituents that use wheelchairs and they get stuck in potholes and get stuck trying to just go down the street in their wheelchairs. Most of the restaurants aren't accessible. And that burden of making the city accessible and the country accessible is on those with disabilities, because people like me and you don't necessarily walk around and realize that we're excluding. In New York's 12th district, there are about 50,000 people that identify as having disabilities. All of these people are excluded. And in order to fight and make the city more accessible, people with disabilities are usually the ones that have to sue and find an attorney to represent them and go to court, despite the fact that our public transit system shuts them out, and have the monetary burdens and the time burdens of sitting in court. And so I would like to make sure that the Americans with Disabilities Act is in it's expanded and enforced at the federal level, so that people with disabilities are no longer carrying this burden. So what my campaign is doing is taking a look at people who've gone completely ignored by representation all this time and are fighting for them, because we are 100% people powered and 100% grassroots. And we're refusing the corporate PAC money and corporate influence and fighting big money in politics with some ideas that I have. And just really unafraid and boldly fighting for the people.
Well, that's great. Speaking of the people that you're talking about, the people who are generally ignored by the system, for instance, here in Rock County, we have, even in Beloit, a town of like 35,000, we have literally hundreds of teenagers who are homeless every single night. Can you talk about your history expanding affordable housing options and, you know, what work may work for you in New York City, may not work for Pennsylvania, may not work for Wisconsin, but what direction do you think we should be going?
Yeah, so I do, thank you for knowing this. I actually have worked in affordable housing in my past when I did used to live in Pennsylvania after I finished my graduate school. I worked for a nonprofit called Community Home Buyers, Inc. that actually bought up housing that had been abandoned, worked with local contractors to renovate it using grant money, and then worked with people facing homelessness to actually give them the homes and put them through a home buyer's course, and worked with them to let them become homeowners. So what we saw is an increase in property values in neighborhoods that had gone forgotten for a long time. and we were able to help mitigate homelessness in that county is where we worked. And that really gave me a passion for fighting for people in a grassroots way. And whenever I look at my district in New York, so many people are sleeping on the streets and so many children are homeless as well. And it's just ridiculous given the fact that it is one of the richest districts in the entire country. And we're allowing this to continue to happen. So I have been really lucky to meet with economists and experts in modern monetary theory. And I realized that we've been looking at monetary policy in the completely wrong way, in a very upside down way. So at the federal level, I've come to understand that anyone who says we don't have the money for something, any representative in Congress, in the Senate, the president, anyone at the federal level who says we don't have the money to end homelessness is saying that they don't want to end homelessness. It's not a fact. The federal government can coin the money that they need in order to prevent people from dying in the streets.
Right.
And it's extremely cold in New York right now. And even just, you know, walking outside between subway stations, it's miserable. So the fact that people are sleeping on the streets is horrifying and heartbreaking, especially in a time where we're seeing that people are getting arrested for entering the subway system without paying $2.75. Yeah. So
it is pretty appalling.
It's awful. So whenever we're looking at the fact that people are sleeping on the streets, that is a failure of every representative that has sworn that they would serve their district. And what we can do is actually abolish homelessness. I support and totally endorse a homes guarantee. And People's Action has done an incredible job at drafting a very comprehensive plan that would create enough homes for every single person to have a roof over their heads, and also renovate existing public housing so that it is up to standard and livable and quality housing, but also in line with the Green New Deal, so that we are minimizing our carbon footprint, and also just thinking about the future of this planet and keeping that in mind. So and also equally important is it establishes a National Tenants Bill of Rights, which places the power and the voice back with the people instead of the landlords and mega landlords and huge real estate developers that we're so used to in New York City. And so I support abolishing homelessness with bold plans such as the Homes Guarantee from People's Action. We absolutely do have the resources for it. We have the money, and there is absolutely no reason that we can't ensure that nobody sleeps on the street in this country, one of the wealthiest countries in the world, and one of the wealthiest districts in the entire country. It's ridiculous and heartbreaking, and it's a choice that we haven't done that yet, and I'm over it.
Hmm. All right. On your website, you talk pretty much at length about the Green New Deal and water pollution, something that's happening obviously everywhere across this country. What are your thoughts about regulating source or point source and non-point source pollution at the federal level?
Yeah, so there's so much that we absolutely need to be doing in order to mitigate and reverse the damage that we have caused on this planet. And New York's 12th district is an epicenter of the climate disaster, and we're already seeing the effects of it. So we have needed bold and vocal representation in Congress, and unfortunately our incumbent, Carolyn Maloney, has been in office for 26 years. And it took Ocasio-Cortez getting elected in our neighboring district to even hear an idea like the Green New Deal. So it's unfortunate that we could have maybe prevented the damage that's been done in the district if we had someone more willing to creatively and boldly lead. So that's really unfortunate, and we need, this is not a time that we take incremental steps to save our district. It's time that we do everything we can all at once. So we absolutely should be enacting the Green New Deal and doing everything we can to push that forward. Locally, I want to point out that New York's sea levels are rising at 1.5 times the global average, unfortunately. So our shores are already flooding, and there's a park in the Lower East Side, unfortunately, that is flooding, and the city's trying to figure out what to do. Do we shut it down and renovate it and raise the level of the park to try to mitigate it flooding all the time? Or it's a huge loss for the community if we have to shut it down, because that's the green space that people with children have been able to go all these years. So it's really heartbreaking to see the actual damage on our planet and on our district. And whenever I think about the next steps that we absolutely need to do, I am for banning single-use plastics immediately. And right now we are subsidizing factory farms. We are subsidizing the fossil fuel industry. Those subsidies need to end, and we need to subsidize things like compostable plastics that we can replace single-use plastics with and make it as cheap as possible for restaurants and grocery stores and any other places that use single-use plastics and sell them. We just need to replace all of the non-compostable plastics with the compostable ones and make sure that we are not contributing even more to the damage that we've already caused. And another thing that, you know, I did bring up the fact that we're having kind of a military style policing of our public transit system in New York City. One of the things that I am fighting for is to nationalize public transit. And I believe that public transit should be free. We should be incentivizing everyone choosing to use public transit over individual cars. And what we can do is make sure that we renovate and upgrade our public transit nationally so that it can hold additional volume. And also just make sure, you know, if somebody's can't pay a $2.75 subway fare, that's our failure as well. So first of all, if they need to get to work, let's give them the transit they need to have to get to work so that they can pay for everything they need to live. And also, we should be concentrating on elevating people out of poverty, not putting them in cages. So this, it's a huge issue that encompasses so many different problems at once. But if we don't fix and save our planet, then we're all kind of doomed. So that's a huge priority in my platform.
Sure. Just to clarify a point that you made just now about nationalizing transportation, would you be in favor of leveraging government power and policy over, say, state and local governments? For instance, here in Wisconsin, Scott Walker, while he was governor, put the kibosh on our high-speed train line. Would you be in favor of government policy to push reluctant municipalities and smaller governments into complying?
So I think what we can do is, you know, the money would come from the federal government. I think it would be kind of hard to refuse at the municipal and state level, you know, money coming from the federal government to upgrade your public transit system. So I would be shocked. I would be shocked if they said no, but they can refuse it, I guess, if they want.
I mean, that's essentially what happened here in Wisconsin. So far, we've paid like $50 million for 2 Talgo train sets that are rusting in Indiana because Scott Walker refused to build the infrastructure.
It's always perplexing to me that there are representatives that actively refuse to do what's best for their districts. So I think I don't understand why you wouldn't want federal funds to upgrade your transit system, but maybe if it is nationalized, then there isn't another option to say no. Hmm. Maybe that's how it needs to be.
Okay. Well, let's change gears to something the pod kind of focuses on, foreign policy.
Yeah.
We kind of have a shared background in that respect. Let's talk about Bolivia, for instance. What would your ideal resolution to this situation be?
So I'm horrified at the trends around the entire globe of right-wing nationalism. And that's what we are seeing in Bolivia. That's what we're seeing around the globe with extremist nationalism against Kashmir, against the Kurds. It's happening all around the globe. And it's unfortunately tied to, you know, nationalism, to forcing religion on people. And unfortunately, I think that we as a country have been involved on the wrong side of a lot of it. So I've been meeting with Joshua Collins' team, and I think that we do need to reevaluate the CIA's role across the entire globe, because we have done a lot of damage by being involved in helping to prop up dictators and helping to prop up people throughout the entire globe that the countries don't want in power. So we as a country need to reevaluate our roles and not force right-wing dictators on other countries when we ourselves are actually struggling with a crazy right-winger as our president as well. So in summary, we absolutely need to reevaluate our role. And whenever I just look at how we've been involved in the past, and whenever I look at the fact that there are so many members sitting in Congress that voted for the Iraq War, for example, I just think that we absolutely need leadership change urgently. Everyone who voted for that war, which turned out to be, you know, a mass waste of human life and mass murder, actually. Hmm. And we committed war crimes, and it turned out to be, if I'm being completely honest, I believe the Iraq War was for profit. And unfortunately, Dick Cheney was never investigated for his war crimes and charged with them. But what we can do is make sure that people are elected to Congress that will never vote to approve our aggressive involvement in other countries, and will not vote for another endless war that will cause our military, which the members of our military have made a lot of sacrifices already, and what I don't want to do is to pointlessly sacrifice their lives. And what we can do is make sure that we don't vote people into office that are willing to do that. So I am for non-interventionalist style government. We need to focus on diplomacy rather than, you know, using our CIA and military to force dictators on people. And what we need to do is take a more peaceful approach. We are absolutely not on the right side of history when it comes to Israel and Palestine. We're not on the right side of history with how we were involved in Syria and jumped out of it. And, you know, sure. we have trained Osama bin Laden and armed him. And then he, you know what happened.
A giant problem for us, right?
Exactly.
But
so...
Mm-hmm. Okay, so specifically, do you think America should become more involved in, for instance, Chapter 5 and Chapter 7 peacekeeping operations?
I am for us becoming involved in peacekeeping operations, but I am not for us becoming involved in using our military to force anything on anyone anymore.
Okay. Well, to change gear on that note, let's talk about another topic near and dear to both of us, gaming. What action do you think needs to be taken on microtransactions?
Yeah, so unfortunately it's become kind of an industry where we're kind of forcing gambling on children. Yeah, so I am for actually kind of regulating that. Other countries such as China are already doing that and protecting minors from using their money in ways that is kind of taking advantage of them. And also providing transparency about what you're purchasing with your money, which unfortunately we do not have. So I am for regulating these transactions in that way.
To my mind, it should be already regulated under the Securities and Exchange Commission, but perhaps because they're microtransactions, they're falling beneath regulators' notice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm sure that there's some sort of lobbying being done to prevent that from taking place. So I think every time that we look at populations of people that are being oppressed and taken advantage of, and in this case, it's mostly minors and children, which is really upsetting. Whenever we're looking at instances that have allowed children to be taken advantage of, you know, we can follow the money and see who's donating to which politicians who are against regulating this in this way.
All right. And before you have to sign off, let's talk about how many votes do you think you'll need to get in the primary, and how confident that you are that you're going to get them?
Yeah, so we are estimating that about 60,000 people will show up to vote in our district for the primary. And we have been canvassing hard and phone banking and emailing since March. So we have already been able to reach out to a huge portion of the district already and are working hard, and our team is growing exponentially as every day, especially since, you know, securing the brand new Congress endorsement and securing some additional endorsements, which we'll be really excited to announce very soon. So every step that we take is moving us in that direction. And one of the things that we're finding is that whenever we are speaking with people for the first time, we ask them if they know who the current representative is, and most of them say no. So that means two things: that Carolyn Maloney has not impacted the lives of these people in any way that people understand. And secondly, it gives us the opportunity to explain how important this election is and what is at stake. Our planet, our people, we cannot compromise on single-payer Medicare for all, for example. We cannot compromise on abolishing homelessness. I am for abolishing student debt and actually also providing credits to people who have paid off their student debt or paid off towards their student debt, because that money should have been able to be used to invest in their future and in their families. But unfortunately, it's being used to pay off interest and create more profit for somebody else that should have never been profit. So this is not a time for compromise or incremental steps. We absolutely need to take aggressive action and take aggressive steps right now to save our people. And until now, the focus in the district and in this representation has been on profit and on helping her donors to increase their profit. And that's not my focus. My focus is on making sure that people have a home, that they have the money that they need to survive, that they have the workers' rights that they need to have a good life, and that we can just ensure that they are not going to the emergency room and accumulating a lifetime worth of debt. These are all things that we can and should prioritize. And also, let's make sure that we even have a planet, which is in question right now, unfortunately, especially if we don't aggressively move and change the course that we are very quickly headed down.
Okay, Lauren, thanks for coming on. Quick, if you want to plug any of your social media or any other ways people can support you.
Yeah, so my website is laurenashcraft.com, and we are, as I mentioned, 100% grassroots and people-powered. So if you're on our website and you like what you've heard and you check out the issues that I stand for and what my platform is, if you want to see us cross the finish line and want me to end up in Congress, then you'll see a big unavoidable orange donate button, and we would appreciate any support that you're willing to show us in that way. And also, you can find me on social media at Vote Ashcraft, and really excited to connect with all of you, ask me any questions, stay in touch, and make sure to follow our race.
All right, thanks again, Lauren, for your time, and good luck.
Thank you so much, Charles. It's so nice to meet you.
Days of sunny, days of rain. Destroy the myth that will break our chains. Break your chains!
Okay, last time. This is drugs. This is your brain on drugs.
Okay, got it. Got it.
Any questions?
So, part of a complete breakfast? Brought to you by the Bad Council.